Hey there, Sticker Snacks. It's your old pal Space Lord PJs coming at you live in your ear holes here at Vorpal Tales. This is our adventurous tall tales, and we're here to allocute about things awesome and adventurous. Today I have with me two of my favorite peoples, at Made of Kimchi, Dwayne, and at Patty Shakes. Patty, introduce yourselves, kids. Tell us everyone about yourselves and what's shaking, Bacons.
Hi, guys. It's Dwayne, at Made of Kimchi on the internet. I am a GM and player with Vorpal Tales. That's all I'm gonna do.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean,
keeping it short and sweet.
Don't let him lie to you. He is much more than that. But okay, I'll follow suit. My name is Patrick. Everywhere on the internet at @PattyShakes_. I also am a GM and player for Vorpal Tales. However, I'm also a writer. Speaking of writing, as when this episode goes live, we'll be a few short weeks away from our Ravenloft campaign supplement book coming out that will be for Pathfinder rules and 5e rules. So, you know, be on the lookout for that.
Ooh. Sounds cool. Glad to have you guys on the show. Let's get to today's topic, brought to us from our home office in Gainesville, Florida. It would seem the peeps want us to talk about anthropomorphic animal PCs.
So I have to admit something out the gate.
Yes.
I don't know if I can pronounce that word. I've been trying all day.
Anthropomorphic?
Anthropomorphic animals?
It eludes me.
Patty, entertain the listeners.
Okay. All right. Here we go. I'm going to focus all of my energies, all of my, you know, phonics learning I have done today.
Okay.
Anthropomorphic?
There you go.
Sounds good.
But is it pomorphic or promorphic?
I think it's
pomorphic.
It's morphic, but it's got like a, like the pose sort of gets extended. It doesn't matter. You did it.
Okay.
We're fine.
All right, cool. Yeah, that was totally one take, listeners. We didn't cut that at all.
Yeah, say it fast. Anthropomorphic.
Nailed it. I think what we're really talking about here is your sort of non Tolkien-esque traditional fantasy type races or ancestries, I guess is what you kind of want to call them now. You know, not a human, not a dwarf, not an elf, not a hobbit, and not a
orc. I mean, because like if you look at it, it's like you got human and then you got short human dwarf, and then you got tall, lanky human elf, and then you have short, hairy human halfling or hobbit or whichever term you like to use, and then you have muscular green human orc,
right? Who's usually like the evil race, and it's like, well, that's not great nowadays, but I would even kind of like, I feel like orc is the first stepping stone into kind of what we're talking about.
That's fair.
Minus, you know, some different looking ears and some whiskers and like, you know, a tail. They're that first sort of thing that I think people kind of maybe back in second edition kind of had, where I don't want to play all these normies. I want to play something just a little bit different. But yeah, so I know with me, I played a little bit of second edition, and I just, you don't know any better back then to play anything but human or dwarf or whatever, or elf. And then third edition comes along and it kind of starts out the same way, but I want to say the first one that because I bought every 3.5 book that ever existed, and I want to say it was maybe there was a book about just all kinds of weird dragons and stuff, and in that you could be what was the original dragonborn, and it was actually a template that you slapped onto anything else. Yes, I remember that. And there was a lot of these inside of the monster manual where like you could be fiendish or you could be demonic, or you could be, I think they even got something down the, you could be a pudding or something, like half pudding or something.
Okay.
It wasn't your official dragonborn. It was, you were half dragon.
Yes, you were half dragon. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, the original book did have half dragon. You are correct. So, but then there was a book. It was like D&D's Guide to Dragonisms or whatever. And they actually did have what was the original dragonborn. And you got to pick different feats and core things. And it didn't change your effective character level, which a lot of the other templates would. So you were basically human. And I did this to Mike Funky Thunder, because this was all in the same thing. Like, he started out playing a paladin, was like, paladins, I don't want to be that. I want to be a samurai. And then I was like, hey, I found this new thing in another book. You want to become a dragon man? He's like, fuck yeah, I do. So
when posed with the question, do you want to become a dragon man? I believe the answer should always be yes.
Yeah, it should be fucking yes. So he becomes a dragon. He is a dragon born samurai and just an absolute badass. And it was probably one of the best characters he's come up with, and I think I've ever played with. But after that, in 3.5, you get introduced, Eberron gets introduced. And so that entire thing, that entire book is nothing but extra ancestries. That you got robot ancestry, you got were-person ancestry, you got doppelganger ancestry, and then it just kind of goes on from there. And fourth edition, nobody remembers, but that actually had Dragonborn as an actual ancestry. So that was cool. And then now you got fifth edition, which again started out with Dragonborn. And now you go to the race page and it's just all there. You got the normies, and then the entire rest of the page is just nothing but, like, you know, cats, dogs living together. So, yeah, I've talked enough. What are you guys' thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just to prove your point, I pulled up the D&D Beyond website here with all the races. And yeah, it kind of reads as this evolution line of, like, okay, yes, you got your Dragonborn, which, like you talked about, they'd introduced before. Your dwarf, elf, gnome, blah, 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 blah. And then your first kind of thing is, oh, then we have Aarakocra, where you can just be a bird person. Yeah. You're just like, what is that jump? Like, because that comes from the Elemental Evil Player's Companion, which came out even before Volos, which was kind of their first big 5e. Like, here's a bunch of new shit for you to play as a character. Like, here you go. Like, change things up. You know, it's getting a little stale. So the Elemental Evil is kind of like this unofficial thing that came out first that was a companion kind of to one of their guides, actually, the Princes of the Apocalypse campaign. Mm-hmm. So this, it wasn't like everyone had that. This was just kind of like, you know, if you happened to get that adventure, you had access to, you know, three new races, Aarakocra, Ganassi, Goliath. And so I can only imagine the shock on people's faces when, you know, they had been playing 5e for however long it was before Prince of the Apocalypse came out. And it's like, oh, hey, congratulations. You picked the right adventure to play through. Would you like to be a bird person because you picked this one? I get a fly speed to start off with. Yes, I will take the bird person for 500, Alex.
Oh, tiefling was another one that was sort of the early dip into this too.
Yeah, so. Which, you know, that's just like every edgelord's favorite race to play with their rogue. If I had a dollar for every not even characters I've managed, but like character or people who've come to me with their player concept, but like ones I've seen out in the wild, like either from a podcast or someone else's live play or whatever, for every rogue tiefling, holy hell, man, I could retire. I could retire and be a happy man living off my rogue tiefling money.
So Dwayne, what about your rogue tiefling money?
Wow. How do I follow that up? So I guess my idea of anthropomorphic in tabletop RPGs is more solidified in the animal aspect. Mm-hmm. Yes, I kind of do believe that the orc may have been the first, but an orc really doesn't match up with any known animal.
No, you're right.
So for me, it's, yeah, I get the point, but it's kind of like an X for me. We were talking about earlier was the, you know, the half dragon. Dragon is it's not a real animal, but an animal nonetheless. So I can kind of see, you know, I see that as the anthropomorphic thing. But actually I've done some looking while Patrick was talking, and there was a lot of stuff, especially in the Savage Beasts in 3.5 that gave you all templates on how to do almost every animal. Like if you wanted to be a jack of folk, you could be a jackal person. They had a template for it. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's funny you said you know, orcs don't really, I you know, especially looking at the picture D&D Beyond uses for orc, I always got like strong like Pumbaa vibes, warthog, like, warthogs with the big tusk and kind of
okay,
like
the...
I can, yeah, all right, okay. But also kind of, the evolution of 5e's anthropomorphic creatures is kind of like, so you have the Aarakocra, which is like they live for 20 years and they're come from the elemental plane of air and they're just kind of like this completely foreign entity, almost alien. And then you have the next animal is a Kenku, which in 5e they cannot speak, they can only mimic sounds. And then you have lizard folk, which literally the third word that describes lizard folk is alien. And then you have Tabaxi, which, you know, everyone loved, everyone loved Khajiit from Skyrim. So 5e's like, well, we got to make money off that. So you have your Tabaxi, which literally have all the same characteristics. They come from they're wandering people. They come from the desert. Like it's literally the Khajiit. They're literally Khajiit.
Right. They're Khajiit.
But then, so they kind of have like this, you know, explain, like, if you want to play an anthropomorphic character, you're very alien, you're very different, you're very weird, you're very, you either come from a different plane of existence entirely, or you're just so weird, just, you know, regular, you know, you're quote unquote regular people, humans, elves, dwarves, whatever, just don't understand you because you're so weird.
Right.
But then I feel like they kind of lean into people wanting to do this, because then they came out with this like turtle package where you can be your turtle. And then just like the animals you can be from there just kind of get sillier. I'm going to jump into a small conspiracy theory here. There was a conspiracy theory for a little while that 5e added centaur as a playable race because of a joke on Reddit. Reddit was used, apparently there are some old rules for being a centaur in some other version of D&D.
Yeah, I remember them existing.
And they talked about if you were a centaur who rode a centaur into battle and what your stats would look like and like,
you know,
how much move speed you'd have and blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, Guildmaster's Guide to Ravenica included centaurs as a playable race after that big meme came out and blew up on the D&D subreddits. So I am part of the conspiracy theory that they included that race specifically because of that. But yeah, so that, you know, they have that, you know, arguably a race based off of a meme. The Minotaur, an elephant person, and then they just got even crazier. Now they're doing these kind of like one, like these D&D Beyond almost exclusive things where you can get these digital downloads where now you can be a Lakata, which is a fish. You're
fish folk. Fish. Yeah.
And then the Grung, which they're a monster from the Monster Manual, but they are frogs. So like they've gone from like, you know, back in the day, which you were describing, you know, humans and dwarves and elves only, to just kind of like leaning into it. It's like, you know, like, fuck it. You want to be an animal? Cool. You can be we have rules for you to be a frog.
It's like almost like they're daring everybody and just sort of like half shaming them. Like, what? You don't want to be human? What the fuck's wrong with you? You don't, what? You're not good enough for being tiefling anymore? Like, and I know for me and playing video games and stuff, like I don't play dudes anymore. I'll play a girl just because I think I've developed some sort of like dysphoria of just seeing a dude all the time. So very much lately, and especially because of Skyrim and Khajiits and stuff, like I don't play just normal dudes anymore. I usually like either throw in now for like video games, but mostly in like role-playing games, I'm usually playing a dude, but I'm not playing a dude that doesn't have like some fur or whiskers on him. Like if that's a choice, that's what I'm going with. Because I and especially in video games, I don't want to see dudes anymore. There's dudes everywhere. Like I'm done with dudes.
Yeah, as a cis white male, I am tired of seeing cis white males everywhere in my video games. Like, especially because I go to video games to get away from the humdrum, boring world of just either awfulness, you know, sometime, you know, in the last couple of years, there was a lot of awfulness going on, but also just like, you know, I had a long day at work. I would like to, you know, escape to my sci-fi fantasy game or whatever it is And then I'm surrounded by more cis-like dudes. I'm just like, I can't escape it. Get out of my face.
Yeah, like, how many people want to bone down with what's-his-name from Mass Effect?
Caden?
Shepherd? Not Caden. Not Shepherd. The bird
Garrett,
dude.
Garrus?
Garrett. Garrus. Yeah.
Oh.
Like, oh. Everybody wants to bone down with Garrus because Garrus is... Sure. He's not the normal. Like, how many times did you let Caden fucking die because he's just another dude in the roster?
I always killed Caden.
Yeah, I think the correct answer was Caden, right?
That's a weird fucking decision because it's either Caden the dude or Ashley the racist, and you're just like, well, she's a girl, so he's a dude. We got dudes. We're good. Like, we can fix racism, I guess. So
it's like, I mean,
you can't fix dudes. So fuck dudes.
Right. So anthropomorphic characters. Right.
And I realized that, you know, there's other systems that were probably, but D&D is so sort of mainstream and sort of the core of everything that has kind of been role playing up until recently. And but I mean, you know, being able to play something like a cat, like as soon as I saw Tabaxi, I'm like, if you don't let me play this, I'm not in your fucking game. Like, this has to be allowed. And I know Onyx has Savage or Scarred Lands, and you can play, what are they called in that?
Manacora.
And in, like, you know, they are more cat than they are human. So
yeah.
And I think that's really cool about Scarred Lands is they immediately deviate off into some like weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Manacora is a core race. Yeah. Asafi, which, you know, I know Dwayne played in my campaign, the snake people, that is a core race. And Scarred Lands benefits from the fact that they have a, since it's an established setting, they can explain that in really good. I think they do a good job of it, of the whole, you know, Titans created these races to, you know, kind of experiment with and blah, 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 blah. And so there's a good explanation for it. Whereas 5e, it's weird because 5e is this thing where, like, simultaneously they have like things like Eberron and Ravenica and things like that, which are established settings and established places with, you know, lore. But then they also just like kind of bleed in these races that, you know, they have to then explain, like, in Ravenica, how they didn't know that centaurs existed until, like, this book came out. So, like, if you have an existing Ravenica game, and then it's just like, oh, well, the official Ravenica book added minotaurs, and they, you know, and all, there's minotaurs in specific guilds throughout this whole thing. You have to now add that. It's like, okay, well, how do I, as a DM, explain the fact that, you know, these minotaurs were just roaming around the city, but no one fucking knew they were there before, apparently.
Oops. Like,
and all the past battles that you had with evil minotaurs.
Yeah, right. It's like, right? I guess some of those might have been good guys.
Damn. Oh, that's fucked up. Yeah, like, you know, and I know, like, campaigns like Eberron and Scarred Lands kind of bake in the sort of extracurricular sort of characters, you know, like the Manticore are baked into it. The Warforged are literally baked into the war that Eberron suffered. And then you have this old material still here where, like, lizard folk possess an alien and inscrutable mindset. Like, alien to what? Like, you know.
Yeah, right. Alien to, you know, humans or aliens to the living machines? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I think. As sort of society has progressed in more acceptance and like sort of feeling out the differences that people have, you see a lot more of that in role playing, which I think is good. Because, you know, as a game master, it's a weird concept of how much do you actually deal with, you know, your entire party is just a bunch of non-humans. Is that a thing? Do you make that a thing? How much of a thing is that? You know, do you just make the racist suburb over here that's like, oh, you can't come into our bar, we don't serve your kind? Like, you know, that's a thing that you kind of have to think about nowadays and present in a different light. And when normally in sort of your old-timey games, it was like, well, you know, orcs are bad. So,
yeah. I mean, so I've handled that two different ways. First was I just kind of ignored the whole race thing. Like, I just made it so, you know, this is my idyllic fantasy world. Yes, there are problems going on. There's a bad guy going around doing things. But you know, people have come to, you know, my friends had come to me to run this game for them to go into a world of fantasy. Let's, you know, I think I can, I think I can eradicate racism in my imaginary world and not have to deal with it. Cause that's just, I mean, it's just also so boring. And it makes you feel awful as the DM to have to like single out a character because they thought, you know, they thought the elephant person was cool, but I hate elephants. And so, your character's just going to have problems wherever they go. It's just like, say, you know, or, you know, someone makes a drow or whatever it is. And it's just like, why, unless the character specifically asks for that, it's just like,
right.
Make it this idyllic world, like eradicate racism. the other way I've done is just kind of lean into it. And especially when we did our last Scarlands game, I had them based in the human empire, and the human empire is very much like, if you're not human or halfling, like GTFO. I never made it like, oh, you're not a human, they just pull you into the side alley and try to beat the shit out of you. Like, it's never that overt. It's more just like, oh, we don't really talk to non-humans kind of thing. So just it's a whole thing that we could spend a whole nother episode talking about. But I think that whole part of it is dealt with nicely when you have other systems like Pugmire and Humblewood, where it's like, okay, there are no humans or anything like that. There's no racism that exists because there are no non-animal creatures.
Right.
Everyone's a dog or a cat. Congratulations. Like, now you don't have to worry about that. Now you don't have to deal with the whole, well, is it weird that the human is traveling with someone that has a dog head and someone that has a bird head and someone that has a snake head? No, because that human doesn't exist there anymore. He also has a cat head. So, like, they're all friends.
I know growing up with things like DuckTales and Secret of Nim and, you know, those types of shows and movies and things, and you got books like Redwall, just seeing animals trying to, you know, deal with human problems is always kind of interesting because you get to come at it from a slightly different angle than, you know, what would normally be with humans. I like something where in Humblewood, where fire is a very deadly, destructive thing that could just wipe out their entire existence. And so using fire magic is kind of frowned upon, not something that's necessarily used. And you develop different spells where they're a little more nature-based. They're a little more, you know, sort of grounded spells, which I think is cool. Dwayne, you've been quiet lately.
I'm letting you guys do your thing.
I want to hear your voice, Dwayne. It's so beautiful.
What the viewers tune in for. They tune in for your sultry tones.
I do.
So, I mean, I guess one thing that we haven't talked about is why it's so popular. Why are playing anthropomorphic beings so popular? And I guess one of those reasons, you kind of got to push back to where did it stem from? And like Sean said not too long ago, you know, you have shows like DuckTales. Think of all your old Disney movies, Bambi, where even though it was a total, you know, they are completely animals, you're still throwing that anthropomorphic, you know, they're acting like humans.
I'd say for a while now, there's been this real long run of TV shows, movies, and books that have these, you know, the animals are the main characters. So like you said, the ones you said, then you also got Zootopia is a movie Disney that came out recently. Mm-hmm. Books wise, you got the Guardians of Gahool books, where it was on owls. It was the heroes were all owls. You had a similar book series. I cannot remember the name of it for the life of me, but it was based on deer, like deer were the heroes. And like, the bucks fought each other and it was like this whole thing. You've got like things like BoJack Horseman, even adult, like it's not just children focused thing, like even adult themed movies, TV shows are like doing this anthropomorphic thing. And I think it's just because people are just like, you know, tired of humans, and humans are just, we've all kind of agreed that humans are the bad guys now. So if you have a bunch of animals up there, it's like, oh, okay, you know, I don't assume, automatically assume this person's awful. And when they prove to you that they are awful, I think it hurts more. And it, you know, how could that lovely, perfect, you know, nice cat be this complete dick? I don't understand.
John, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say with like movies and things, I know you have that sort of uncanny valley thing with humans, and if they don't look human enough, or if you're trying to develop this sort of realistic world that can't have a cartoony look to it, then you end up with like, well, your humans don't look right. So I think it's easier to develop anthropomorphic animals and run it that way, and then you don't have that weird effect. And then, you know, you just do the Charlie Brown thing where you only see your humans from the feet up or something like that. And I think there's something to be said with us seeing more anthropomorphic races in tabletop and stuff, because I think people are trying to, I think a lot more these days, people are trying to figure out an identity and just sort of trying to feel out, well, you know, you can attach these aspects to a bear, you can attach these aspects to a wolf, or these aspects to a cat, and you kind of play that out. And it's like, well, is that me? I don't know. Like, you know, there's a lot of ways that you can sort of get in tune with your animalistic instincts, for lack of a better way of saying it, and then just sort of figure out who you are as a person. And just, we've talked before, just, you know, lately people are finding out that they're very small in this world, and there's a lot to be lost in. And I think being able to explore that through something that isn't human helps people sort of figure that out in ways.
And like you said, we create these characters so that we, you know, we easily relate and identify with them. And it's that it all goes back to that primal connection that enables society to, you know, find animals appealing, mm-hmm. more so than humans in some instances. That phenomena crosses over from real world into RPGs.
Yeah, nobody wants to see an animal get hurt, so you kind of have extra thoughtful care in what happens to those characters.
Right.
And I know I know who I am as a person, so I don't experience that when I play something like Sprouting Hops, who's a chef cat monk. But I'm just kind of exploring a character that is a little off the wall, a little different, a little, you know, he's not there to save the world, but gets stuck in these weird situations of having to save the world. Because, and there's something funny and interesting about a cat who just wants to cook, having to save the world so that he can just go back to cooking. Like those types of stories, those interest me now. I think there is too. And you mentioned BoJack Horseman, just the sort of absurdism that I think permeates a lot of the zeitgeist lately, of just, I think a lot of people are just fed up with the world, and they do just kind of want to see something different. They want to see something that it's a familiar shape, but it's a familiar situation and a familiar thing and just different. And that's interesting. So
It's an insane source of comic relief in almost anything. I mean, because you want to see, I mean, if it was, you know, BoJack Guyman, you're like, oh, well, this is funny because he's saying stuff that's funny, but let's put a horse head on him and it's even more ridiculous.
Right. Like, okay. Yeah.
Like, I don't like my, you know, we'll go back to the Scarred Lands that Patty just finished up. Mm-hmm. I don't think Sousa would have been as powerful as a character, you know, a snake person going around making small toys for children, if I would have played a halfling.
Yeah, you put a human head on Sousa as opposed to that snake head, and you walk around giving toys to little children, makes it very creepy.
Yeah, you're like,
but
you're
like the snake head. Oh, you know, they're just trying to fit in and they're trying to make friends and yada yada. But the human head's like, oh my god, what? Run away, child, run away.
There is something absurd in a good way about a snake dude who just wants to make toys for children. Like,
yeah.
That level of absurdity is just, it's comforting in a strange way, because it's like, oh, this guy is a snake dude. Snakes supposedly, you know, made Eve want to, you know, destroy the world or whatever. But like,
and this guy's, you know, this girl, and this guy just the next Santa Claus.
they just want to make toys. Like, you know, you take that. Because I personally don't like snakes. I just don't. They're creepy. But then, like, Dwayne's, I dig that. Like, okay, the creepy snake dude makes toys. I'm down for that. I trust that guy, like you said, more than the little hobbit that wants to make toys for children. Like, there's something for suspect sure. about that.
That small hairy dude, follow him home. He'll find some disturbing things in his basement.
There's something not right with him. We should look into that. Yeah. I think we do live in a world where playing Uncle Scrooge is more comforting than playing, you know, random human number five or whatever it is. So.
I'm sorry, Patty.
No, go ahead, please. Over.
I think in a sense, especially when it comes to movies, but now I think more moving into TTRPGs, not as much, but I think it will evolve, awareness and empathy for those, you know, for someone who's never owned a dog,
mm-hmm.
and they don't know, you know, what that companionship is like. You play something like Pugmire and like, oh my God, you're like, wow, being a dog in this world and having these companions and how you look out for each other. And, you know, the idea of being that good dog or being that good cat,
mm-hmm.
it just makes you fall in love with animals even more.
Which is funny because I think I don't think they originally intended for it to be that way in Pugmire, but so many people just play their pets in that game that mm-hmm. it's almost expected. And so you can't, in the rules somewhere, it says you can't kill the PC without like ultimate consent between both the GM and the players and everything, because nobody wants to live through their, you know, they're playing their dog that they had die when they were 10 years old. Nobody wants to relive that sort of event. So,
But you know, in Pugmire, they're probably going to die to, you know, a magic spell or a sword. It's probably not how little Lassie died when they were 10, but still, like, you know, is their dog or cat or whatever dying? So you don't want to do it.
There's a sort of trauma. I mean, I hate it when any of my characters die, but I would feel 1,000 times more horrible if like one of my pet characters died. I'd just be like, well, fuck, that sucks. Like, I have to walk.
Well, of course. For those who don't know, Sean is the ultimate cat daddy.
Yeah.
I have four cats, and every single one of them is personified somewhere in one of the games we played. And I did it with Sprout just because, and it actually stems from playing Skyrim and not being able to figure out a name for my Khajiit. And I was just like, well, Sprout's standing there. All right, you're Sprouticus hops. You're sprouting hops. That's it. You love drinking, you love making beer, and that's it. And then he just looks at me like, meow. And I'm like, okay, yeah, well, get some treats, cool. And that's where it spawned from. And then we got more cats, and I just turned them into characters because we played a lot of games where I just chose to play a cat or needed a cat or something like that. So I think you can make a story a bit more personal that way.
Mm-hmm.
And if people know that that's your cat, you know, personified, then it's easy to make an attachment, or there's a subtext there that is Sean's, you know, cat. I know that Sean would never do something bad with that cat. So I can probably almost 90% trust that character. So I think there's some ease there. There's some handicap with who's playing whose pet, and you know, that association, then that pet, maybe they're just a little mischievous, but you know, you at the end of the day, you know that you can always trust that character. So I think there's something assuring there.
I think it's important to talk about how there's been several Robin Hood movies made, and the best one is still the anthropomorphic one when I was a kid.
That Oodle-Oddle, Oodle-Oddle, Golly, what a day. Like, that is probably one of the best Disney movies.
Robin Hood and Little John running through the forest.
Yes, it's so great. And you know, that movie's only like 45 minutes long or something. It's really fucking short.
It's great. It's concise. Like,
yes,
you know, they tell a story, and it's a great, it's a really good story, and there's intrigue, and there's you know, Robin Hood gets captured, and does Robin Hood die? It's all, you know, it's happy ending, of course, because, you know,
yeah,
Disney. But yeah, it's a great movie.
I don't know, being older, I know those movies, but I, you guys are younger than me by just a little bit. I don't know if, like, did you grow up with anthropomorphic characters a whole lot? I know you mentioned Robin Hood, but like, what was,
yeah, that level? I mean, you've got, like, for me, it was like, you got like Robin Hood, Bambi, Shrek, you've got Scooby-Doo was, I've watched a ton of Scooby-Doo when I was a kid. You got Tarzan. I mean, if you don't want to count just animals, but like, you know, in an object, you got Toy Story,
Lion King.
Lion King.
Lion King.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess he would have had a shit ton now that I think about it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you guys go into tabletop games, where do you start with making a character, and how do you get down the pathway of maybe playing something that's anthropomorphic? Like, what's that thought process?
That's the total opposite of how I create my characters.
I'll be honest, race or ancestry, whatever the term is to use these days, that is probably the last thing I add to my character.
I'll choose something that is interesting for whatever concept I have.
Okay, cool.
Like, yeah, yeah. Initially, I'll jump back to Sousa again. Initially, we had this idea for a raging toy maker.
Yeah, we're gonna make some type of rage caster.
Oh, okay.
But then, as I started developing the story, like in my head, I'm like, well, it just doesn't work out very well. So we went with Artificer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay. Like, well, what hardships could I give an artificer to make an interesting background? So then I had the, you know, the accident. I'm like, okay, you know, and then you look at stats and it's like, well, you know, this race, this ancestry gets some bonuses here and this one gets one there. And I don't like to min-max, but I still like to give myself a little bit of an up.
Yeah.
So based on where, you know, for Scarlands, I looked at the map and I'm like, okay, well, this is where the story is going to be coming from. And because I've already established that I'm from far away because this bad thing happened and I had to leave. Let's say we're down here. Who's down here? And I actually bounced between human and Ironbred, which is the horse people.
Oh, yeah.
And Asathi. And I was like, well, Asathi are kind of hated already. So someone who's trying to recompense for a war that happened before she was born seems like a pretty cool thing. You know, they're making things for people around the land, trying to, you know, change an image, and then something went wrong, and because they were already suspect, it made it even worse. So it just kind of all stemmed from that.
Yeah, I liked how that was part of your character, the whole, like, yeah, feeling like you need to apologize just for existing.
Yeah.
I thought you did that really well.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about anthropomorphic characters.
Your question at all?
Yeah, no, I think because everybody makes characters differently, and you know, sometimes I just go down the line and, like, I think I usually start with class, and then I'd look for a complementary race, but then I always make sure that I shy away from something normal, in quotes.
Yeah.
So I usually end up with, like, you know, frog person or some, or cat person or whatever that ends up being, just to try to create something that's not normally seen on the page. So yeah, that's where I kind of end up at.
I'm going to make my next character is going to be a Kua Toa barbarian.
Ooh, okay.
All right, sounds dope. Cool. Patty, any final thoughts?
Free campaign idea out there for the DMs looking to do a one or two shot, not sure what to do. Assign your players four mix of monk and fighter characters, all turtles, and you have yourself and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
God damn it. That is fucking great. Mm-hmm. Damn it. That is great. That is an awesome idea, Patty.
That was free. No charge on that one.
That one's free. And when you make millions of dollars, because everyone loves your live play on Twitch, I just to be like at Patty Safe _. That's all it is.
Yeah, just credit him. Like that was his original. Damn, that was good.
And Krang would just be a baby mind flare.
Fuck. All right, this is starting to write itself, Patty. I feel like
Shredder to Death Knight. These are easy. Come on, this is easy stuff.
Fuck. Okay. Patty, I want you to throw in these elements and see how long it takes for people to sort of start picking up on this.
Well, I feel like you pick up immediately when I make all of you turtles and one of you is like proficient in quarterstaff only, one of you proficient in dual sword, short swords. It's just like, why does this sound so familiar?
Wait, why are we all monks? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Wait.
Dwayne, any final thoughts? Any last says?
Play. I guess just play your characters and don't play your characters. Be more open and try new things, and you know, see how these races, because a lot of these, you know, new ancestries have interesting mechanics, and it's things that, you know, if you stuck with your normal human or elf, you're like, oh man, I wish I could do this because it'd be even cooler. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? The turtle or the tabaxi or the Slytherin can do it. Like if you want to be a dual wielding spellcaster, but you need a free hand, why don't you be an Asathi with the feat of using their tail to hold weapons, which is right? Doable. It is totally doable in Scarlet.
That shit's cool.
And that you can still awesome. Cast spells with your hand. You can do it. Cool.
Yeah, another final thought, like, I know we talked a lot about D&D, but there are a lot of independent systems out there, a lot of newer systems out there that it's all animals. It's all anthropomorphic animals. It's all about adventuring and the stories that get told. People should be seeking these things out because they're really cool systems. They're, as much as they are different in the ways that the characters are, they are different in the ways that the systems are. And it's a different game. It's a different type of tabletop. It's a different type of system. It's a different type of storytelling. And I think that's healthy. I think it's good to start with D&D, but as soon as you're comfortable with that, like, start looking at other systems, start looking at other things, mm-hmm. start looking at things with like foxes and bears on the cover, because those are going to be some really great storytelling systems, I feel. And it's just something I think people should dive into a lot more.
Yeah, actually, before we sign off totally, I think there was one system that we kind of shined over. I don't really know why. Starfinder. I don't know why we didn't talk about that.
We hung on the fantasy, but yeah, sci-fi systems. I remember playing Star Wars, the old Star Wars 3.5 base RPG, and like there was literally a 200 page book that had every alien race in Star Wars with beginnable stats. Like, these were all characters that you could play right out the freaking gate. And want to play a Bothan? It's in there. Want to play a Wookiee? It's in there. Want to play a Jawa? It's in there. One of the things that I will be sad that I will probably go to my grave never getting to do was I wanted to play a Jawa hacker that there was then a prestige class called Crime Boss, and I wanted to make it so that the Jawa had hacked enough to become a crime boss, and the crime boss was just always like a hollow, and so you never were able to meet the actual crime boss himself, but the crime boss was actually the Jawa
behind the curtain.
Yeah, the Jawa behind the curtain. Like, Starfinder, like, they're
Skittermander for life.
Skittermander for life. Yeah,
Skittermanders. You got the Ahsoki,
yeah, like
the insect looking guys.
What are the lizard guys called? I can't even remember.
Vesk.
The Vesk, yeah, the Vesk. The Vesk, yeah. So, you know, yeah, like, and sci-fi systems, I think, are ripe with this sort of thing. And it's almost the little cliche in sci-fi systems for, you know, but those are totally.
Well, because it's a little bit easier because the whole idea is you have the entire universe.
Right.
Like, so of course, there's a planet that has cute little adorable fluffy creatures you can play because it's the universe.
Right. Exactly. Like, the universe creates so many cool things. And I think playing different types of alien creatures or different type of, you know, anthropomorphic creatures, you get a greater appreciation for your own existence. And I think that's a good thing. So, yeah. Yeah, we totally missed the sci-fi bit.
Yeah.
Gotta redo this whole show. Oh, well. maybe we'll just, a whole another topic is alien creatures. Maybe we'll do that. Anyway, cool. That's our show. As always, you can find us on the social medias at Vorpal Tales. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/VorpalTales. See our calendar that pops up in our show reels and on our website at VorpalTales.com and on our Twitch channel. Also, check out the pull list on our website. Friend of the show at Funky Thunder does his weekly review in no particular order of this week's latest comic releases. And please be sure to check out our shop links on our website. Vorpal Tales has created several great supplements to enhance your games. There's more in the works for all the systems that we play to make your tabletop experience more Vorpally. And we also have a merch shop now. So if you want an apron with our very awesome logo on it to cook really awesome meals for your, you know, really cute creatures that you have in your house, you could get one of those.
If you're looking to
join Sean, is a food club too.
Yeah. Right.
If you're looking to join Sean for bacon and survival, and you need something to protect yourself from the oil that splatters, stop by our merch store and pick up an apron.
If you want to watch me play video games eating bacon, and you also want to sort of get immersed in the element of bacon, you could cook bacon, but cook it safely with an apron that has our logo on it. And it would be, I don't think there's any spatulas or anything with their logo on it in that store.
Unfortunately, but no. We don't have any serving tools there with our logo on it yet.
But you could drink your coffee with a coffee mug with the Vorpal Tales logo on it.
And then spill it on your Vorpal Tales shirt.
Right. And then you could spill it on your Vorpal Tales shirt, get another shirt and then a hoodie with that merch with that logo. So, you know, these are all great ideas that I think after you've heard this podcast, you should just go check out and purchase, because there will be more Vorpal Tales the more stuff that you buy. So Everybody wins. And we want to thank you for buying our merch as much as listening to this podcast. So thanks for filling your ear holes with our silly voices. And for the love of the dice, game on.